everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my buddy John Couch. John, engineering and producing the show. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. Tuesday, June 22nd. Really nice today. A little cooler than it has been. One of my Facebook friends says at 21 minutes past 9 this evening, it will be the 21st minute of the 21st hour of the 21st day of the 21st week of the 21st year of the 21st century. I don't know if that is true, but it seems like it makes some sense. So my friend Jane sent that along to me. So there you go. We're 10 and a half years into the radio project at Green Things in the Zocalo Village studio. The radio station is 1030 Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management. Let's go right without further ado on the live line to the state capitol, where there is some breaking news. State Representative Andres Cano, Democrat, District 3, with me on the live line. Representative Cano, what is this about a walkout of you and your colleagues?
Well, Bill, it's so great to see you on or listen to your voice on this Tuesday. I don't really consider it a walkout, Bill. I think ultimately the House majority and the Senate majority, as well as the governor, have presented us with a plan that is fiscally irresponsible, more than $1.7 billion in proposed tax cuts. And my party has been stripped out of the process, and if the majority doesn't have its members to be there to conduct the budget proposal that they want, because three or four of their members are missing and not all of their 31 members are there, I'm going to keep fighting for more investment in our schools and healthcare, protecting our environment. So it's really a shifting of, responsibility, because I refuse to be complicit in the House majority's desire to permanently harm our state's economy.
Do they have enough votes to pass this, Andres?
Well, we don't know. They don't talk to us, Bill. I think that certainly, you know, what they needed today were warm bodies in the chairs. And I'm listening closely to my constituents who are not only telling me no, but hell no.
What's the package look like, the whole budget package? Is it a decent budget, or what's the big glaring item other than this tax deal?
Well, I think ultimately, Bill, the fact is that we have a tremendous opportunity to invest in the core programs that will help lift us all up. It's been a hard year. I want to fully fund pre-K. I want us to be able to rewrite the headlines that we saw just a couple of weeks ago, being 48th in the nation for K-12 per pupil spending. Voters also approved Bill last year, Proposition 208, to invest in our schools because the legislature refused to do that. And now what we're seeing in this budget proposal, not only on top of the reduction of $1.7 billion from our revenue, but we're trying to completely ignore the will of the voters and undermine Prop 208. Prop 208 will not happen if this legislative budget proposal by the House and Senate majority and the governor goes through. I don't hear any alarms about our economy suffering right now. In fact, thanks to congressional Democrats in D.C., we're expecting a surplus of nearly $4 billion. Why not invest in programs still that will help us all recover instead of rewarding those at the very top? And I know I sometimes sound a little partisan when I say that, but here's the reality. This proposed tax cut proposal, Bill, that's being introduced by Governor Ducey will be about $40 returned to the average Arizonan. I can't imagine that being something that Arizonans are thinking about right now. It's, you know, gas tank on a good day. I feel like, you know, it's a broken record up here and certainly one that Arizona should be paying attention to.
$1.7 billion. What does that do to the rainy day fund?
Well, it's going to make it grow. I mean, when I started in 2018, the rainy day fund was a little over $1 billion. We are now inching toward $2 billion. And after all of the revenues that we've gotten from the federal government, thanks to the American Rescue Plan and President Biden, I mean, we have the opportunity to invest in kids' care, for instance, to be able to provide health insurance to kids. I mean, it's as simple as that. The fact that we, you know, our state is burning right now, and yeah, we came together last week and we funded a $100 million relief package, but We've seen the writing on the wall for several years, have introduced legislation to help with wildfire mitigation, protect our environment, and all of those proposals have been refused. This really is all about rewarding those at the very top and ignoring the will of the voters by absolutely undermining Proposition 208.
To clarify, if $1.7 billion for taxes, wouldn't that be money taken away from the rainy day fund, Andres Cano?
Well, it takes away from everything, Bill, I think is the point right now. We want to be able to write a new chapter for this state. This is there's a trend at the state capitol. Tax cuts have been enacted every year since 1992. That's when I was born, by the way. And we've lost $5 billion in revenue since then over that time. So it is absolutely alarming that over that nearly 30-year history, one-fifth of the state budget is being proposed to be permanently reduced in the current year. It's absolutely alarming.
What hasn't, beside this tax plan, what, in your opinion, really, where has the legislature seriously dropped the ball this session and have missed opportunities?
Oh, I mean, it's our schools. It's the fact that I represent teachers who are working two jobs just to be able to make ends meet. The fact that 50,000 public educators had to come to the state capitol in 2018 to demand investment, and you know, the governor wanted us to celebrate less than a percentage point of a salary adjustment. There's still the opportunity for us to fix the biggest equalizer that we have in our nation, which is ensuring that everybody has a good education. I've also spoken on this show in prior years about our direct need to invest in community colleges. The fact that I represent now in the legislature for the third year, three community colleges, campuses that receive $0 in support from this legislature. It's not a matter of available resources, Bill. It is all a matter of political will. And with the slim margins that we have in the State House and Senate, you've only got a one vote difference among the parties. We've never seen that since the 60s. Let's come together. Let's be a part of the process to be able to pass a good budget. But, you know, it's governing right now with the majority within the majority, and that's just unfair to the more than 4 million Arizonans that my party represents.
Did you say Pima Community College does not have any fund? They're not going to get any funding out of this budget?
It's not ongoing. It is not ongoing, and I think it's extremely problematic. Every business owner that I have talked to says we've got to support workforce development. We've got construction and skilled labor that we need to close the gap on. I think our community colleges can do that. Why not provide that permanent ability for us to say every year this legislature commits to providing support to our community colleges? The only community colleges in Arizona not getting support from this legislature ongoing are Pima and Maricopa community colleges. I don't think that that is fair. It's why I'm standing up for my constituents who are asking for greater investment.
So where are we on this? There's such a slim margin, right, of error, really, for the Republicans to get the budget passed. Do you anticipate anything on that today?
Well, the Speaker has adjourned the State House until Thursday, and I think that's when we'll start to pay attention to what is going to happen. We just don't know until then. And I think, you know, I think we have to kind of simplify what House Democrats did today. We said we will not be complicit in this budget process if we are not a part of the negotiations. And had we all 29 been in that building to be able to do what we are supposed to do, which is pass a budget, we've got 8 more days to work together on this bill. There's this fear and hysteria that we've got, the state's going to shut down. It's not going to shut down. We will pass the budget, but work with us to make that happen. So we'll see what we do on Thursday. I just am not going to allow this budget proposal to proceed if what it means is nearly $2 billion in permanent reductions.
All right. There's the very latest on really breaking news up at the Capitol. And it's been a long time, State Representative Cano. that we went to pretty much the midnight hour on a budget. I can remember a few years, it's been a long time, where they actually stopped the clock at midnight to try to get a budget. So as you point out, we are up against the clock, but as you also point out, there's no reason why the two sides can't get together on this to pass something, as you point out, that would be more beneficial to all Arizonans. Andres Cano, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Be safe.
I will certainly try. And our interview with Andres Cano is made possible by our Liveline sponsor, Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio for his Tuesday Moneymaker Report. Shell, how are we doing? Two thumbs up. I can go for that on a Tuesday afternoon. Let's take the break. Shelley's after this.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And I'm always interested to hear what Shelly Fishman has to say, as are our listeners. And Shelly, first of all, great to see you.
Good to see you, Bill.
And
how's that arm coming?
The arm's doing pretty darn good, knock on wood. 5 weeks since the accident. Second PT session this afternoon. I'm ready.
Cool.
They'll be working the old arm, trying to get those muscles back in shape. So we had a pretty good day yesterday.
Pretty good.
Pretty good. Fantastic day.
Yeah.
I think the best in 3 months, something like that.
Right.
But you know, we had a
really bad week last week. Right.
But let me ask you, big picture-wise, as we get ready to close out a fiscal year or the midway point of our calendar year, has it been a pretty good darn year?
It's been a very good darn year. we and I did these numbers this morning. They're much better now than they were this morning, at least on a daily basis. Year-to-date on the Dow, we're up 12.33%. So we're up the average yearly amount less than halfway into the year. The S&P were up 14.6% year to date, and the NASDAQ were up 11.76% or so. So what we have here, Bill, is we have a year that if it were flat from here on out, and it's not going to be flat, you'll have good days, good weeks, bad weeks. If it were to wind up at the end of the year where it is right now, we will have had a good average year.
Well, that is good news.
I think so.
And the economy may not look exactly like it did when everything went south in February of 2020. There have been a couple of interesting think pieces, Washington Post specifically. Heather Long had an excellent piece in the Washington Post saying, we've got a new era here.
Yeah, the article that she wrote yesterday really did catch my eye for a couple of reasons. One is it's kind of a non-political take on what's changed. The headline is, the economy isn't going back to February 2020. Fundamental shifts have occurred. Now, you and I have spoken any number of times about the importance of this, making a distinction between daily shifts, things that, you know, happen in response to something, you know, in the news or whatever, and something fundamental. When something fundamental in the economy happens, then markets have to adjust for that. And what we're seeing here in a number of ways is potentially some, you know, very fundamental shifts in how our economy operates. Now, those are things that I think what Heather Long is concluding is we really won't be able to accurately measure for a while. You know, you need several quarters of data, and then you need to really, you know, put that data through some analysis and have really smart people look at it to see whether those changes are going to be impactful and where in the economy those changes will be impactful. What we seem to see here is that the labor force is having a higher than usual impact on wages without having legislation that, say, raises the minimum wage to $15. So what we're seeing is, you know, for a lot of reasons, in part because of the unemployment support that we were getting both from states and the feds, but also because people are unable or unwilling to, for instance, go back to work when they don't have good child care, or go back to work without guarantees that the work environment will be safe. So what people are doing are, you know, holding out for a set of rewards that is not being legislated anywhere, except that the lower 15 or 20% of wage earners seem to be having a much greater impact on wages than we thought could be possible without, say, unions coming back or some sort of legislation to assist them in doing that. Now, that's just beginning. We don't know what kind of impact that will have long term on the price of goods and services when wages go up. we're already seeing some signs, certainly, of inflation. But a lot of that inflation, according to, you know, Ms. Long, is caused by shortages in supply and disruptions to the supply chain. So, one perfect example of that is the cost of lumber.
Right.
Which has gone 20 times higher than it should be, mm-hmm. For a couple of reasons, but is now coming back down to levels that are, you know, more affordable. But what she brings out in the article, in fact, we had a caller last week in this segment who complained about the fact that he had bought a house.
Right.
And couldn't get the work done to make the house suitable for, mm-hmm. for what he wanted. Everything from appliances to lumber to tile to the things you need to build or rebuild a home have cabinetry, for instance, and which you used to be able to get in 3 weeks, now it takes 3 or 4 months.
That was the whole supply chain called just in time. And I think it was Professor Hoffman from ASU a couple of weeks ago. I think you were here. It was a Tuesday, and we were talking about, I asked him about that whole supply chain. It might be a time to kind of rethink that just in time.
Well, just in time, just in time inventory control,
yes.
is a way of cutting costs, mm-hmm. and making sure that if you have the data in your business, mm-hmm. that you don't need to stockpile
right.
a lot of stuff,
right. Right.
Because when you do that, mm-hmm. that idle inventory mm-hmm. is not earning money.
So it's a cost saving.
So that's
cost
what it's
cutting.
All about.
Yeah.
But it's absolutely dependent on supply lines.
Mm-hmm.
So if your supply lines slow down,
which they did last year,
then your just-in-time inventory control breaks down and you can't meet the demand. So prices go up
mm-hmm.
because you have more people wanting stuff mm-hmm. than the stuff is there to meet
mm-hmm.
that supply. The other thing we think that might be causing some of this is the pent-up demand. You know, people in the top part of that K recovery
mm-hmm.
Have increased their wealth over the past year and a half in an amount that is virtually unheard of. People have not been able to travel. They have not been able to buy the things that they, expected to be able to buy. And now that the economy is, let's call it, normalizing somewhat, the expectation is people with that pent-up demand and the cash to meet that demand will start spending it and do so in ways that could have the effect of spiking inflation. So where the Fed comes out on this, and again, we thank Heather Long for really kind of drawing this out for us. What the Fed has said is, look, we're going to have more inflation this year, year over year, not necessarily a two-year inflationary period from 2 years ago to now, but the one-year inflation is going to be the kind of inflation that we haven't seen in a very long time. But the Fed continues to believe that it's transitory, that it is temporary inflation that will work itself out when supply chains normalize. So what the Fed is saying, look, next year we could see in 2022, we could see 2.1% inflation. That's within their guideline. That's okay, but the inflation that the general consuming public has been used to over the past couple of years is 1.5% inflation. You say, well, what's the big deal, between 1.5 and 2.1, except when you realize that that's a 25% increase in inflation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have that problem and the possibility that consumers, when faced with the potential of future higher prices, will begin to hoard. And that then becomes this snowballing effect. We joked about it last week.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have a snowball in Tucson, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
The snowballing effect of people hoarding, making the supply lines go dry, raising prices, hoarding again, and that feeds on itself. So one of the things that the market, which of course votes with its dollars, the market is seeing is that the Fed, both the more conservative and the more you know, aggressive Fed members are very much aware of this phenomenon and are pledged to keep their eye on it so that if they see signs of these fundamental changes in the economy causing permanent inflation, that what they will do is step up and essentially put the screws on the economy just a tiny bit to slow things down.
It is good news that the lumber price is coming down. I'll tell you, it had been just skyrocketing.
Right. Yeah. But it's not just lumber. It's gasoline. It's so many things. What was so interesting about this article and which really caught my attention was the bottom line, which is we don't know how the pandemic will have made fundamental changes to the economy in the long term, and we won't know the answers to that question probably until sometime the middle of next year.
New York Times had an article about tons of people that are deciding not to go back to the office. They like working at home.
At least one or two days a week. And then you've got people who are the baby boomers who maybe would have put off retiring for a while, but over the past year and a half have decided, now's the time to do it.
There you go.
They're very, very sensitive about inflation because once you're retired, you know, your income becomes more fixed. The politics, therefore, the political pressure on the Fed could become very difficult for them to resist. So a lot of things are moving right now.
A lot of moving
markets
parts.
Are okay. Right. Economy looks like it's going to be okay, too.
Thank you very much, Shelley.
Have a great week.
Okay.
CBS News Brief. White House COVID-19 response coordinator Jeff Zients is celebrating the amount of Americans who have been vaccinated, but he danced around the fact that the administration will not meet President Biden's goal of having 70% of the U.S. adult population vaccinated by July 4th.
Based on today's estimates, we're on track to hit the 70% target for those aged 27 and over once the data for the July 4th holiday weekend is fully in.
The problem, he says, is for those between 18 and 27. A day to celebrate in Michigan as mask and space requirements are lifted. Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
Effective today, there is no more mask or gathering order. Effective today, there are no more capacity limits indoors or outdoors.
Ahead of procedural votes on the For the People Act, Republican Senator John Cornyn on why he does not support it.
Because it's a federal takeover of state elections, which are under the Constitution given to the states.
CBS News Brief. I'm Matt Piper.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things is my go-to place for everything green here in town. And hopefully in maybe even a day or so, we might get a little moisture to actually start the recovery process. Boy, the desert is just desperately crying out. We need rain. You see the cactus are shriveling up. I mean, it's a bad situation. But if you're going over to Green Things and you decide that, yes, you'd like to buy some plants, but which we hope you will do, but on the 13-acre site is also Zocalo Village, some beautiful merchandise, much of it hand-carved in Mexico, Latin America, and some beautiful things from Europe. Check out some of those mesquite wood dining room sets that they have there. Beautiful things. Five shops, standalone buildings. We call it Zocalo Village as part of Green Things. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Their website is greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Jeff Silvertooth is with me in studio. Dr. Silvertooth is the Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture, and we have a new intro for him. Dr. Silvertooth is a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the University of Arizona's Department of Environmental Science. His responsibilities include leading a program directed toward the development of irrigated crop production, management strategies that optimize the soil plant system agronomically and economically, with full consideration of the short and long-term impact of inputs environmentally. Professor Silvertooth is a fellow of both the American Society of Agronomy and Soil Science Society of America. Jeff, I like your new intro. Suits you very well.
I can hold up to that one.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Bill. And you?
Doing well. What is agronomy?
Agronomy is a study of crops and soils.
It is?
Right.
Okay.
So it's basically crop production systems, but that's agronomy. It's an old term. Like you say, we have a little renaissance with the term today, but that's essentially what it is.
But you consider yourself an agronomist.
Yes, sir, I am.
And that was that the intention when you got into the whole business, to be an agronomist?
Yes, I was at Kansas State University. I first discovered what it was. I've been working on farms since I was 12, but I didn't know what agronomy was either.
Yeah, you've shared with us that in the past that you kind of got into it at a very early age, and you were out in the fields, weren't you?
I was just working as a farm laborer here in Kansas and Oklahoma since I was a kid. And I got into school at K-State, and I was looking around and looking at, you know, what to study. I thought maybe veterinary medicine, something like that. Mm-hmm. It was something I knew about.
Right.
It shows you how ignorant I was. I went through looking through the catalog, and I saw animal science and agronomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right into that. Well, my gosh, that's what I'm interested in. That and range science were interesting to me, range management.
Yeah.
But I went into agronomy department, got a degree in agronomy, I went to work as an agronomist, crop consultant on the High Plains, and went back to grad school and come to Arizona. And 35 years later, here I am.
Well, the new intro that I read covers really a lot of ground. I mean, you talk right. about irrigated crop production. You talk about management strategies, soil plant systems, and then, of course, in a setting of that is environmentally sound.
Right, you bet.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the overall picture. Well, taking that to what the situation we're facing here with a Tier 1 shortage on the Colorado River, right. which is going to be instituted, it looks like, early in 2022. On the front lines of this, of the impacts, will be the people in your business.
Absolutely.
So how is that all going to work?
Well, it's going to be tough. It already is. The transitions are tough right now. But what will happen, Bill, more specifically, this Tier 1 is a provision that was developed into the Drought Contingency Plan, which we mm-hmm. call the DCP, mm-hmm. that was passed 2 years ago in a cooperative agreement with the lower basin states, the Colorado River Basin. And that would include Arizona, Nevada, California. And, of course, then it includes the two states in Mexico that receive some of that water as
and
well.
And they all signed off on this.
They signed off on that and said, here's what we'll do. If they hadn't done that, the Secretary of the Interior would have had the prerogative to step in and say, this is what will be done mm-hmm. to mitigate this loss of water mm-hmm. on Lake Mead in the Colorado. So it all started with this 22-year drought that we're into right now, lowering dropping levels on Lake Mead. You know, in 2000, Lake Mead was full, and now it's about 39%. And so to conserve those waters, the drought contingency plan was passed. And the rule there was when the level of water at Lake Mead is projected to drop below 1,075 feet above sea level on January 1, and that Bureau of Reclamation makes that forecast based on river conditions in August preceding that new January 1 date. So it's looking like right now, when they look at that dam and make that projection this year in August for 2022, that the water levels behind the dam at Lake Mead will be below 1,075 feet above sea level. Therefore, that will trigger Tier 1. Now, when Tier 1 goes into effect, what that will do to us, getting directly an answer to your question now, in us in agriculture, it will cut 65% of the ag water pool out of the CAP, the Central Arizona Project, that brings water off the Colorado River into Central Arizona.
65%.
There will be no cuts to municipal industrial. There will be no cuts to tribal water allocations. So who's taking the hit is going to be the ag community in the Central Arizona Project Irrigation District. So that's primarily Pinal, some of Maricopa, and a little bit of Pima, but it's primarily hitting Central Arizona.
But what worries a lot of people, Jeff Silvertooth, yes, 65% is going to be reduced, but the farming community, the ag community, will then look at other sources, namely groundwater, and that has a lot of people concerned that they're going to be tapping into groundwater.
They're going to be.
Okay,
yeah.
So how do you respond to those people who are saying, oh my goodness, this is not good?
They're We all recognize it's not good because that's a finite resource.
Yeah.
And those water districts that are going to be affected that way went under the Groundwater Management Act in 1980, developed what we call active management areas, mm-hmm. AMAs.
Okay.
And those areas are under AMAs, and so that's what the districts, that we thought the CAP would be the salvation. Mm-hmm. What we also recognized even 30 years ago was it was going to be about a 30-year salvation. Mm-hmm. We thought it would give us an opportunity to develop plans and contingencies for moving ahead to the future. They have done that. Irrigation efficiencies have improved. We have made a lot of changes. There's been a condensation of some of the acreage in that area. But now, I tell you, it's severe. So they're turning back to these groundwater tables. The farmers, the people in the communities, the ag communities, as well as the people externally in the urban communities, we recognize it's not a hard equation to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, it's a finite resource.
Finite resource.
Yeah, it's a serious deal. Plus, it costs a lot to pump that water. and you've got to move it. You have to refurbish all those wells. The wells have been turned over to the districts in most cases. The state of Arizona allocated some funding from the legislature a couple of years ago to help the districts refurbish. But it's an expensive process, and it's not a long-term fix.
So I'm wondering, Jeff Silvertooth, if you cut your water, say, 65% right, for your ag,
right,
maybe some of the producers are going to say, well, maybe this might be the time to sell off some of that. If they're in a development area, this would be the time to sell off some of that acreage to the home builders.
It very well could be. And also, too, the interesting that's happening right now economically, as you know, as we recognize, it's a concern a lot of people. Well, the housing industry is really tight.
Yes.
So housing prices are going up rapidly. The demand is supply and demand. Supply is great. Arizona's growing in population. It's urbanization is increasing, particularly in central Arizona.
Yes.
And so your point's well taken, and it's a very, very likely scenario, depending on economics. Economics within the ag community and economics within the home development community. So in some areas where that might be, say, opportune,
yes,
I could see that possibly happening very easily if the things
story
line up.
Yesterday, Jeff Silvertooth, on the New York Times, about this home building boom up in Phoenix.
Right.
And they were talking about workers who are trying to start like a half hour before sunrise.
Right.
To not have a dangerous situation, because some workers, they pointed out, one worker almost fell off a roof and killed himself, would have killed himself. He got so dizzy. These people are working in these incredible conditions, but the point that they were also trying to make is they can't seem to put enough homes in the ground or build enough homes up in the Phoenix area, and it continues to expand down into those agriculture areas of Pinal around Casa Grande and all that area, Pinal County.
Right. Well, that's very true.
Yeah.
You know, it's a rapidly growing area.
Yeah.
And it's, my wife was just commenting on that article this morning. We were talking about the very same thing.
Yeah.
She'd seen it in the New York Times, and Susan was talking about the very thing. She doesn't see it firsthand there in the Phoenix area very often. I do. I'll be up there tomorrow for the Desert Ag Conference, and you see the expansion of those urban areas.
Yeah.
I feel like, which I am, literally, old Grandpa Silvertooth, I got to go into those areas today, and I can't believe how much they've developed and urbanized in areas that I knew as farmlands in Chandler, East Valley, Queen Creek.
When I came to Arizona as a student at the University of Arizona from Chicago in 1965, when we would drive up to Phoenix, first of all, I-10 had basically just been connected from Tucson to Phoenix, but you didn't really get into urban areas until Baseline Road, if folks know about Baseline.
Right.
That was kind of it.
Right.
Now look where
we
are.
Oh, my goodness, right, yeah. The only thing that stops it is Indian Reservation, the Gila River Indian community.
Yeah.
So you get on the highway there from in the mornings between Casa Grande and Phoenix. That's Casa Grande has largely turned into a bedroom community to Phoenix. So that development is extending into Pinal County. The town of Maricopa itself is now a bedroom community right outside south of the Gila River Indian community. And it's people there pretty much commute back and forth to Phoenix. So we're going to see more and more of that, Bill, I think, as that encroachment of that urbanization extends south. You know, urban planners, I've seen this, as you have as well, for past
about
30, 40 years.
You're going to talk about the connection, Tucson-Phoenix connection.
Yes, right.
Where you could have rooftops from Tucson to Phoenix, with the exception of the Indian Nation.
Yes, sir. Right, sir.
I mean, it's kind of moving that way, isn't it?
Right. So you can see where that could actually develop over time.
All right, Jeff, we've got more to talk to you about.
Sir.
Let's talk about sustainability. But we're going to continue with the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio with always a great conversation with Jeff Silvertooth from the University of Arizona. Be right back.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery in Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
MedCare to You is a new Tucson-based concierge telemedicine urgent care, specializing in caring for our patients in the comfort of your location. We deliver your prescriptions and even provide in-person visits with our dedicated staff. It's convenient, quick, private, and your personal information is always protected. Find out more at MedCare2UAZ.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, this portion presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. The Buckmaster Show guarantee for our listeners who want to go over there. I tell everybody, it's going to be 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City because the elevation's 5,000 to 7,000 feet. So we have had, obviously, some really excessive heat. It hasn't been that bad over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, with temperatures in the evening around 60 degrees and the highs, even last week at the peak of our heat, mid-90s in Silver. So it's not too bad over there. Might want to take that three-hour drive east of Tucson, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Dr. Jeff Silvertooth, our Buckmaster Show contributor on agriculture, is with us in studio. He's a professor and extension specialist in agronomy and soil science at the UA Department of Environmental Science. Okay, got one person on the phone that wants to speak with Dr. Silvertooth, but first I want to go to an email that I received during the break. Jeff, would you please explain a Tier 2 and 3 cutback on the Colorado River?
Certainly. I can do that in brief. Right now I'm not sure of all the details.
We talked in the first segment about the Tier 1 and how it would affect agriculture.
Yes, sir.
What would a 2 and 3 do?
2 and 3 is basically this first, it's going to move to step Tier 2. Tier 2 would be at 1,025 feet above sea level, elevation of the water at Lake Mead. It'd be imposed very similarly to the 1075, so it's 50 feet further drop on the reservoir levels.
That's not that much.
It's not that much, but it's a lot of water.
Oh, okay.
So the hope is that we don't get to Tier 2.
I hope not.
Because Tier 1 will arrest the decline.
Okay.
And hopefully the climate will change. Hopefully we'll see some precipitation, and particularly winter precipitation in the next couple of years. But tier two would take us into more severe cuts. Tier two would basically begin to clear out what we would call the remainder of the ag pool. Ag pool will go first. The agricultural water pool in central Arizona for those CAP projects will go first.
They'd pull the whole plug.
The plug will come out of those pretty quickly.
Okay.
And then you start looking at some of the possible reductions in some of the marginal allocations that they call industrial municipal. But it'll be a long time before the municipal and you say the cities and urban areas are really hit by the reductions. It's primarily going to go to industrial and to, first of all, agricultural takes the cuts. The other place that they're looking is to withdraw water along the other irrigation districts and other allocations on the Colorado River. Of course, one of the big questions politically always is California. California takes quite a lot of the water out of the Colorado River. And tier one, tier three, tier two, and tier one don't hold California blameless or harmless on that, but they'll start to have to take some cuts there as well, particularly at tier one. Tier one is where you basically shut everything off except absolutely essential.
Okay. Let's go now to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Robert, you are with Jeff Silvertooth.
Hi, Bill. Doctor, traditionally, the only way you can get Americans to conserve anything is to raise the price. Gas is a perfect. I think water's too cheap, but then I'm having difficulty squaring that notion away with people on fixed incomes and poorer people, where, of course, water would be required no matter what.
Right. Good point. Matter of fact, a colleague of mine, Robert Glennon at the University of Arizona, he's an attorney, works in water law. He's an advocate of saying marketizing. A lot of people are. They're advocates of marketizing water. Make it do just what you say. If it is valuable, it should have a price associated with that. And in a capitalistic society like ours, economy, that should be the driving force. However, you also offer a good point that could rub a lot of people out who don't have the wherewithal in a competitive market to provide that. So it comes down to the question, is water a commodity that we sell, or is it water or something that we all should have as a basic resource available for all the people all the time? Basically, it's a kind of a combination of that now, Robert. It's interesting to know a lot of us here, myself and a good amount of people in my family, you look around and my neighbors and friends, we probably pay more for a cable bill than we do a water bill in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. You know, and you have to ask, how is that happening? It's because of it's covered by the government to a large extent in terms of how that water has been managed and allocated out to us for municipal, industrial, and agricultural purposes. That's what the farmers are seeing right now. For every drop of water they're going to get from here on out, they're going to pay a lot higher price for it because they're going to have to pull it out of the ground and take care of it all themselves. And that's a concern with them. But, you know, everybody signed off on this DCP a few years ago. And what it does is it protects all those people you were describing, and most of the people in the cities, helps protect them and provides a cushion. We still pay our water bills. We pay for infrastructure and delivery and water per se. But for the preciousness of this water we understand and appreciate in the desert, I think you bring up a really good point, Robert, in terms of how little we actually have to pay for it today, and how long can that last, and how do we do that? Makes us appreciate how that's done. That's a good point. I appreciate you bringing that up.
Great point, because sustainability is now really what it's all about.
Absolutely.
You can't, at some point, if you keep going down into the aquifer, the water quality diminishes, doesn't it, Jeff?
It depends where you go. We have this beautiful quality water here in Tucson, and we're going pretty deep in the aquifer. If a lot of shallow waters are actually abundant, but they're highly saline quite often.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that's oftentimes the case. But, you know, also, that's a good point too, Bill. You can go to different parts of, say, central Arizona and look at a well that has given quality at one point. Just go a quarter mile away, half a mile away, similar well, similar depth, very different water quality. So punching into a different aspect of the hydrological environment.
I wonder if we had started planning many years ago for the desalinization, whether that would have been a game changer, but it would have been extremely expensive.
It still is extremely expensive, but I think I was having the same conversation just a few days ago, and the question was asked, because Robert's asked a very good question here, what about desalinization? How far away are we from that? And some nations, I think Israel does it. I think the Saudi Arabians do it. A few places in the world, arid regions, are already doing that. It's expensive, and you've got to be able to dispose of the brine that's left behind. But it's probably not too inconceivable to think of some of the coastal areas, particularly in the Southwest, maybe California, that might begin to consider that in the next decade.
What do you do with brine, used brine?
Yeah, not much. Best thing to do is to have it close to the seacoast where you can dispose of it back out on the ocean from whence it came.
Good conversation. Always a pleasure. Jeff Silvertooth, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir, Bill. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, wrapping it up on this Tuesday afternoon. Our thanks to Dr. Jeff Silvertooth and John Couch on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show. Dave Ramsey's show is next, a very popular program about your money. That's next on KVOI, The Voice. Bill Buckmaster saying, see you here 23 hours from now with The Buckmaster Show. Have a great day.